Hello, folks, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Features. I'm your host, Tom Majure. The Features program is an exploration program. You never know where we're going to show up. And today we are out in the woodlands. We're actually on a Michigan savanna, and we're going to talk about that further. I'm here with a wildlife biologist, Heather Keogh. Heather, welcome to Strong Tower Radio Features.
Thank you for having me.
Most people don't know that there's a savanna in Michigan. When they think of savanna, they usually think of Africa and wildlife and safari. Then you'll talk about Carn blue butterfly and they say, what? With that in mind, let's have a word of prayer and get started with our interview. Our Father in heaven, thank you for the opportunity to explore your nature and be with us. In Jesus' name, amen. Heather, tell us a little bit about yourself, your experience with the U.S. Forest Service.
Well, I began here with the U.S. Forest Service in 2006, and I've been here on the Bald and White Cloud Ranger District ever since. It's a wonderful area. A huge number of recreation opportunities are on this district, lots of different kinds of wildlife habitat, and the people are fantastic. I have been working with the Carn blue butterfly since I started. When I got here, we weren't doing a whole lot, but boy, we've grown the program since.
Okay, let's jump right in. What is the Carn blue butterfly? How big are they? How do we know if we've seen one?
Okay, well, the Carn blue butterfly is a very small blue butterfly.
How small is small? Oh, nickel. Okay, good.
It's the size of a nickel. And that's with its wings extended. Both the males and the females look different than other blue butterflies because they have these little orange spots on both the underside of the forewing and the hindwing. In addition, the female and the males look a little bit different. The males are this beautiful pale blue on the top side of their wings, while the females are more like a grayish blue, so a little bit darker, and they again have those orange spots on the hind wing.
See, and this is part of the U.S. Forest Service. It's the Manistee Huron National Forest?
Well, we actually say Huron Manistee National Forest, but close enough.
Okay.
And we are on the Manistee National Forest, and that's on the west side of the Lower Peninsula. The Huron is on the east side.
Well, tell us a bit about what the U.S. Forest Service, its intent, and what it tries to accomplish.
So the Forest Service mission is basically to provide multiple use management in a sustainable way, so these natural resources are available for people now and into our future. And those resources are recreational opportunities, timber production, wildlife and their various habitats, as well as beautiful botanical resources. We also have other programs like archaeology and lands, which feature things like minerals and other land uses, such as campgrounds and recreation sites.
We're on a beautiful day. We're doing this in June, and we'll talk more about that because that's related to what we're looking at, the butterfly. The headquarters in Baldwin was just a beehive of activity today. There is, how many people work out of your office?
Oh, well, it varies, but as you noted, it's really busy right now, and that's because it's spring. So spring overlaps with our fire season, so we have numerous resources from around the country, and I'm not sure people know this. They come to help us make sure that we are preventing forest fires. So we have numerous what we call engines and hotshot crews that are from all the way to California, down south to Florida, so all across the nation. So that's one reason it's very busy. The other half is, you know, basically we just opened everything up to recreation. Our campgrounds are open, our trails are open. We've cleaned them up and they're ready to go. So people are coming and they're utilizing those. And I can say for sure that the campgrounds are really packed right now.
Give us the magnitude of the recreational opportunities. How many people interface with the U.S. Forest Service? Any ideas?
Well, I do know a figure that I was given a couple years back. I don't know how outdated it is, but just a few years back, they told me that we have over 4 million visitors
Wow.
each year.
And that is in just this area? Or?
Well, I believe that's for the Huron Manistee National Forest
Wow.
as a whole, but still, that's an awful lot. And Bald and White Cloud Ranger District gets quite a few because we're so close to the cities down south.
And there's so many things to do. You have several rivers, so there's kayaking and canoeing and...
Well, yes, those are some of our biggest uses, but we also have people who love to fish, and so there's lots of rivers that provide excellent fishing opportunities. We're well known for that. So that's one of the big things. And often people just like to camp near water. So we have these great rivers and we have these campgrounds that are nearby and adjacent. So people are taking advantage of that.
Why is the Karn blue butterfly important to our listeners?
Well, the Karn blue butterfly, and I'm going to start calling it KBB, is a federally endangered species. So it's very, very rare. It's also an indicator species for savanna health.
And the indicator is?
So basically what that means is the Karn blue butterfly, KBB, can only really occupy a very special kind of habitat. And savanna provides the habitat requirements. And if the Karn blue is able to occupy successfully a savanna, that means it's such a high quality habitat that it's suitable for other savanna dependent species.
It's kind of like the canary in the mine. If the canary is alive, it's good. If the canary dies, it's time to do something different.
Yes, and kind of the opposite of that too is, you know, we've really seen a decline in savannas over the past century. And that's been due to reforestation, fire control efforts, natural succession of woody vegetation, and a lot of human development. And as a result, a lot of plants and animals that depend on that habitat have also decreased in numbers, including the federally endangered KBB. So by monitoring KBB populations, we can determine if our management efforts to restore these habitats are actually working.
What is a savanna?
That's a really good question, and I get a lot of answers from people when I ask that to them. In our neck of the woods, because it can vary dramatically based on where you are, like you mentioned, Africa, savannas here have scattered trees. They have vigorously growing wildflowers and grasses in the understory, and it's speckled with wildlife shrubs throughout. And this provides an excellent food and cover resource for wildlife. They really are a bit different than just a giant opening or a prairie because they have that multi-structure appearance of trees in the overstory and shrubs in the understory, and then this just carpet of wildflowers.
A prairie could be a savanna because it's a mixture of trees and has multiple layers to it.
Well, and typically in Michigan, prairies are extremely open and hardly have any trees. So you get kind of like a different suite of plant species. Some plants just don't tolerate full sunlight constantly. They have to have some kind of shade. You'll notice even when you plant garden plants, some of the little packages say plant in partial shade. Well, the kind of plants that grow in savanna, they want some partial shade. And so if you put them in a really open landscape, they often get taken over by grasses or other wildflowers that can really tolerate that.
Is a savanna a transitionary that it can go away and eventually become a full forest and you've lost a savanna?
That's what natural succession is referring to. The natural succession of woody vegetation basically means over time, the savannas slowly have the trees grow in, and that tree cover eventually chokes out the wildflowers and the native grasses and the understory because they're just not getting enough light.
How has development and the way humans use land use affected this over time? Has it been doing better, or is it we've got to be more cautious?
We're still losing savanna habitats. So if you look at the landscape as a whole and you're trying to build a house or build any kind of infrastructure, obviously an open landscape with scattered trees is a little bit more desirable than a fully forested area. And these areas also are quite beautiful, and they usually have a history of use where maybe a homesteader came in. So, you know, they usually have roads that go to them,
okay,
or at least near them. So those areas are undergoing development, and we still see that, especially like in the southern part of our district. People are moving in and building residences, or maybe where they used to have maybe a hunting camp, it's transitioning to maybe like a summer residence. And in that case, you are seeing those areas getting converted to a house with some other structures, and unfortunately, sometimes lawns rather than native landscapes.
It means that we have to be vigilant. We have to be good stewards of the land.
Yes, definitely. So, I mean, when you come into the landscape and you have a piece of property and you see that you have lots of wildflowers and wildlife shrubs, you know, you might want to consider maybe retaining those native plants, at least in portion, so that wildlife can still thrive in your area.
Let's talk about the KBB. What do they eat?
So this is a species that is very dependent on one plant called wild lupin.
Kind of dangerous, isn't it?
Yes, and the reason they're dependent on wild lupin is because they're caterpillars. That's all they can eat. So the adult butterflies actually will feed on many different kinds of wildflowers and flowering shrubs, but their actual caterpillars, they can only eat wild lupin.
What type of habitat does it require?
So I just described what the ideal savanna looks like. So the habitat requirements for the KBB is very similar. You need variable canopy cover. You need abundant wildflowers and grasses, and you need lots of wild lupin. Another catch-22 is these little butterflies do not fly very far. So it's very important to have many patches of high-quality savanna that are close together, so the butterflies can disperse from one area to the other, both to make sure they have healthy populations and also they just have enough resources in case one area, for instance, is really open and dry and it loses its wildflowers early in the season versus maybe another area that's more shaded.
This year could be a representative of that we've had quite a dry spell. Some areas that might, during a more moist spring, might have been their habitat and they may have to move on if the plants diminish.
Yes, exactly. So when you're managing for this species, it's really important to key in on variability. You want diverse savannas. You want some savannas that are partially closed canopies and maybe even some closed canopy areas with wildflowers in between. And others be very open with some scattered trees, because in those instances when we have cold, wet summers, we want more exposure, more sun exposure for those plants to thrive.
Where do the KBB usually hang out?
So typically they're near wild lupin, but when they're looking for mates, they often will go into grassy areas, and then throughout the opening, they'll also will be foraging wherever there's wildflowers. So if you key in on wildflowers and wild lupin, that's usually your best bet to find the carnivore butterfly.
What is their range, or what areas do they frequent?
Well, savannas and other habitats that it used to occupy used to span from all the way from Minnesota to the East Coast, down all the way into like Ohio.
So they're a northern species.
Yes, they are. But over time, with the loss of habitat, that range has contracted. So really, we're looking at Wisconsin and Michigan, New Jersey, New York, as being the locations where there are still hot spots for the species. They are in Michigan, and in fact, if you look at some of the databases that show the listings, they occur in 11 counties.
Tell us.
It's in the Lower Peninsula.
Okay.
And it's primarily in the west and southwest portions of the Lower Peninsula.
So what would be the furthest south city or county where they're located?
Perhaps Allegan.
Allegan, okay. And what would be their northern region?
I believe the most northern county is Lake and Mason.
Wow, so that's Ludington. So this is literally Baldwin in south.
Yeah, so basically we do have a few populations that are in this area, which is right south of Baldwin, and then they stretch over towards Chase, and then they go all the way down to Muskegon. But that's just on the Manistee. That's not to say that, you know, it's also in Kent County and Allegan County, but in those instances, it's on other ownerships.
You know, I got to thinking, maybe Strong Tower Raider should adopt the Carner's Blue Butterfly.
Well, it's definitely a signal for hope for a lot of folks who are looking at some sort of evidence that we're able to overcome some of the challenges we have to species declines. If you can save species like the Carner's Blue Butterfly, there's a lot of hope for other species that are also in decline.
We're on a county dirt road right now, and there's this canopy of trees here. There is a barrier.
So the Carner's Blue Butterflies are attracted to open areas and light. So they're attracted to roads if the savannas are adjacent to roads.
Which is a little hazardous for the butterfly.
Yes, most certainly, because then they can easily get run over. They don't move very fast. So vehicle collisions is a cause of mortality. So to try to reduce that, when we make these new savannas, we try to build in a buffer of forest to kind of retain the butterflies in the savanna that we built rather than having to go to the road. So yes, it's like a forested buffer.
How wide is the minimum buffer optimum for these KBBs?
It really depends on how thick the forest is. The thicker the forest, you might be able to make a smaller buffer, but I've never made a buffer that is smaller than what we call a chain, which is 66 feet. But typically I try to even go bigger, maybe 150 feet.
They like to hang out in the road. And why do they like to hang out in the road?
Well, they're trying to collect minerals. So it's called mud puddling. So they'll go into the road, especially when it's wet, and they're in the road there to actually collect minerals. And so they're you know, actually collecting resources for themselves. And by doing so, they increase the number of eggs they're able to fertilize.
So folks, if you've ever watched after a rainstorm, you'll see butterflies around the puddles. We're walking through the understory here. There's ferns. We're walking through ferns. Of course, there's a few naturally felled trees and some brush and bushes. But walking into the savanna right now, it's opening up into a clearing.
This is wild lupin.
Okay. We'll put a picture of that on the website. It has a flower. It's kind of a light lavender.
Yeah, it's a whorl of leaves, and typically it's like 8 and 9-ish type leaves, yes.
That one happens to be only about 8 inches high. Does it grow even taller?
It can if it has really good growing conditions. Now I'm trying to avoid walking over the lupin because the carnival butterflies lay their eggs by lupin, and so we don't want to kill the young of the next generation.
Again, we're in this multi-story. There's a few tall trees that are 40 feet high. They're spread apart. There's some real wide openings. Some parts of it looks like it's 300 or 400 feet wide. And this lot's at least 1,000 feet long. You can hear some of the birds chirping. They're probably doing their mating call. There's a lupin right in front of me. I'm stepping right over it. Another one to the left. You're welcome. We are seeing a few butterflies. I'm looking forward to this.
So now we just have to find one that'll sit still for us.
Now, again, they're about the size of a nickel.
Yes. They're about the size of a nickel. And they are a bright blue color. And then when they fly, they fly pretty low to the ground initially. They might get a little higher off the ground, but look for low flying butterflies.
So about how many feet? About 3 feet or?
Yeah, that would be good. And then that's a dragonfly. So we don't want to flush the butterfly up to be eaten by the dragonfly.
Ah, that's a predator.
Yeah.
Gonna step over another group of lupin. I'll never look at lupins the same again.
Yes, all of this is lupin. And the flowers, for the most part, have been fed upon by some deer, which obviously is a resource for the deer, but then also can limit how much nectar is available for the carner, because then those flowers aren't available, and they will feed.
And the deer probably eat it before the flowers bloom?
No, they actually like the flowers. And they'll eat them even when they're flowering. They just kind of take off the top. Oh, there's a carner right there.
Okay.
So you see how it's blue?
Yeah, yes.
And it's flying back and forth?
Only about 18 inches off the ground.
Yep.
Going from lupin over the lupin.
Yep, and there's some more back in that patch of lupin there. And then we have several over there in that patch.
And that's off to the right here.
I just flushed that one up.
Yep.
So definitely want to be very careful.
What's this one down here?
There's another carner.
I've identified my first carner.
Yep, and we just got that one too. So we do need to be mindful because they are flying around. And so that one is a female, and you can see how the top is grayish in color.
Going a little closer.
Now, if you want to take a picture of the butterfly, the key is don't get the butterfly in your shadow.
Okay. There it goes over to the right. That's a female?
Yes, that is a female.
I see one right there. We're going to try to take a picture of it. There's more here than one would assume.
Well, and if you look, you can see why. This is basically a carpet of lupin.
Yeah, just about every direction. There's the little patches in between.
Little open patch.
These lupin are about 68 inches high. Here's my carna right there.
Oh, I have another one you just flushed up right there. So now you were able to see the species.
What are you doing to help recover the habitat for the carna blue butterfly?
So the Forest Service is managing for savannas basically across 5 designated metapopulation areas. So
okay.
5 management zones that have been designated for this purpose, for restoring habitat for not only the carna but other savanna-dependent species.
Is that in Michigan or is that across the country?
On Forest Service lands, they only occur here.
Wow.
So this is the only place on National Forest Service lands where you can find the carna blue butterfly. And the counties that we're focused on right now are Lake, Newaygo, and Oceana. Now that doesn't mean we don't have carnas in other parts of the Bald and White Cloud Ranger District. It's just they're very scattered and in small savannas. And usually they're adjacent to a lot of other ownerships, or there's just not enough land base of Forest Service lands to come up with enough habitat management to make a difference for the species. So we have to focus our efforts in areas where we're really going to be able to manage what's called a viable metapopulation. And what a viable metapopulation is a population that is able to withstand stressors. So this year is a stressor. You can see that the lupin is curled up and it looks very stressed. Some of it's even turning yellow.
It's kind of folded. It's like only like quarter open. It looks more like a tulip.
Yeah, so and that's because it's hot. It's dry. It hasn't rained hardly at all in the entire month of May. And now we're into June and we're still waiting for rain. This doesn't typically occur. Since I've been in Baldwin, I've only seen it this dry probably once this time of year. So, you know, it is one of those things that occurs, and you need a viable population number, enough butterflies, enough habitat for it to be able to withstand that stress, because some of the individuals are not going to make it this year. But those that do will be able to repopulate next year because there's sufficient habitat of good quality and a good enough number of butterflies.
What other organizations are working with the U.S. Forest Service to help bolster these numbers?
Oh, we work with over 34 partners, and it's really hard to just name a few because you know you're going to miss out on a few. But I can say that more recently we've had a few also help us go after some grants. So I'm going to really focus on those this one second. The National Wild Turkey Federation, the Ruff Grouse Society, American Woodcock Society, Michigan Department of Natural Resources, SEEDS Eco Corps, and YouthWorks. These organizations took the time to go after some grant funds to actually try to restore savannas in these designated metapopulation areas to benefit the butterfly and other savanna-dependent species. And really, without partnerships and grant funding, this isn't possible. So, you know, for example, over $2 million in project costs have been invested since 2010 by the National Wild Turkey Federation and its partners through an ongoing stewardship agreement. So that's huge. That's a huge opportunity for us to get a lot of work done on the ground. We've also had volunteers contribute over 2,500 volunteer days. People that come out and help us plant wild lupin, help us weed, cut back vegetation that's growing into openings, and monitor the populations. So partners and grant funding is what has allowed the Forest Service to really conduct a lot of treatments. And what I mean by a lot of treatments, restoration activities on our district has dramatically changed. In 2006, we might have been able to do 50 acres of treatments annually. Now we conduct over 1,100 acres of treatments.
Wow.
Every single year. And then, you know, the work is really paying off. We're seeing the management activities improving the status of a diverse array of at-risk species. So they may not be federally listed, but state listed. And then for the carna blue, through natural dispersion, we have this species occupying over 40 of our new creation areas. So areas that we newly created.
Brand new.
So that's a huge number of new areas that they now occur in. So we've gone from having 300 acres of known occupied habitat on the district to over 1,700 acres.
Sounds like we're making progress. Is the trend looking good?
I believe that we're making progress. I can't ever say we will be 100% successful, but we are doing much better than we did a decade or so ago. So we are seeing the numbers improve. We're seeing the number of areas that they're occupying improve. And this is one of the new savanna creation areas.
Wow, what year did this one come into?
We started making this in 2009. Okay. But savanna takes a while to actually create.
What can our listeners do to help pollinators, including KBB?
Well, the first thing they can do is think about their own area that they can manage, so their own land base. So they can make sure that they are retaining native plant species. They can improve maybe their backyard for native wildflowers and shrubs. In this way, they'll provide food and cover for wildlife in general, but they can also plant a pollinator garden. So they also benefit pollinators. So instead of having lawns, really change their landscape. The other thing they can do is avoid using chemicals. Chemicals harm butterflies and other wildlife. And you know, at times we're tempted to use chemicals to solve a lot of problems, but we want to make sure that we're also managing for our native plant and animal communities. And then they can come volunteer.
Yes.
Yeah, they can help with the Forest Service. They can help us do habitat restoration treatments. They can help us do surveys. And when they come to the forest, they can help communicate a message to anyone else they interact with. Stay on Forest Service roads. Stay on designated trails. Use designated campsites. Don't go off roads into areas that look like big openings and park an RV and make a campsite. You know, leave those areas alone because that's where special species like the carnival butterfly exist. And, you know, just kind of allow that balance, that multiple use balance to exist.
Heather, tell our listeners how, if they have an interest of volunteering and becoming a part of saving the Karner blue butterfly, how do they start that process?
All they have to do is call the Baldwin White Cloud Ranger District and ask for Heather.
Oh, wow. For you?
Yes. So we don't have a volunteer coordinator necessarily. Each district biologist on their district is the individual that is trying to bring people in and actually get them out to the landscape to do project work and to do surveys.
Wow, that would be a very rewarding thing to be a part of, bringing the Karner blue butterflies back into, get them off the endangered species list.
Yes, and it also helps a lot of other species. So I mentioned that a lot of other at-risk species are benefiting from these areas being managed, and I would have to say that, you know, look for things like red-headed woodpeckers, American bumblebees, Hill's thistle, yes we do love plants, as well as prairie smoke. We have numerous skippers like the otter skipper and dusted skipper that exist here. We have different kinds of birds, like I mentioned the red-headed woodpecker, but we also have seen prairie warbler in our habitats. We have Blanding's turtles, eastern box turtles, and wood turtles that come in and nest in them. And, you know, the one iconic species that everyone relates to for savannas is the monarch. Every single year, you can see loads of monarch butterflies come through our savannas.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for opening our eyes here on Strong Tower Radio Features. We have been blessed by having you and to have the U.S. Forest Service looking out for our endangered species.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been really enjoyable, and I'm glad you actually got to see a Karner.
We did, and our listeners can too, especially if they volunteer by contacting Heather at the Baldwin U.S. Forest Service Center here in Baldwin, Michigan. Thanks again for being a part of this program.
Well, thank you.
Until next time, I'm your host, Tom Majeure, for Strong Tower Radio Feature. Bye now.